Blog Talk Radio.
1, 2, 3, 4. Something you fear, then it's your friend. Well, I guess that I'm a gambler, and that I'll always be. So time and luck both run out on me. So won't you say a prayer for me when I leave tonight? It's over before it starts. You see, it's won or lost in the will of a human heart. So won't you say a prayer for me when I leave tonight? With luck and the grace of God, I'll be alright. There's a fine line between the living and the dead. When you're out there,
between the baseball game, game 7 of the World Series for Astro fans since 1971. It's kind of tough. He just walked across the tying run.
And it's 5-5 here in the fifth of game 5.
If you can't hear that, unless you're watching it. my bells button. There it is. Hello. Welcome to downtown Milton, Indiana, which all is not done, but habitable. Getting close. House painters are supposed to come next week. I don't know when some of the inside finish, but it's done. It's good enough. We got sales production on the way of some of my mom's stuff that I kept just sitting around and had no help on in the years that Dad died. And he left me with a lot of this stuff because he always keep it. Well, we kept it. And I give a lot of it away to the family. They didn't come and help get any out of the house. My nephew Chris came and picked up several boxes of things. Girl friend of mine, nice lady, had cleaned out my mom's closet for me and dress after dress after dress after dress after dress after dress after dress. Anyway, she took all them to Goodwill and places, just astounded by what they was getting on some of that stuff. Anyway, Mama liked to dress up. But after 7 years, I'm finally getting the house cleared out, redone, a lot of the bad parts. A new bathroom on the horizon. So, patience and living long enough, we'll maybe get some of this shit done. I don't know. Anyway, you can call in if you want to call in. I'm on for an hour, I believe, tonight, even though we got a late. It is 424-243-9540. I can't type it, but I can say it like that. 424-243-9540. I'm Matt Duffin. I'm one of the original hosts. In fact, I came on, I think, a day before Kim. We all came on the same week. I have a story of near death. Incredible, incredible recovery. I was dead. I mean, dead. On arrival, my trauma doctor thought he put down his Big Mac because his wife didn't really want him eating. He took another bite. Thought he'd go see what he could do. Well, 8 days later, what he did is he kept me alive. For the most part, I mean, they lost me several times throughout that, I think. I don't know, 7 or 8, something like that. I don't know. It's not important. What's important is my father and my daughter had faith and belief. My daughter was too young to really understand. My other daughter was in the middle of the Indian Ocean. Tried to keep it. She had enough going on, as Dad decided. And there's not much you can do about it. So, before I get off into a long story, let's pay us something. Sharon Wendy Robertson, that always perks me up.
The world is ever changing, and people come and go. They bring with them a chance to message. Each message is a part of lessons on our journey to know the human heart. You can take time to share the moments with those you meet each day. Fill the world with peace and love along your way. Nothing in life matters more, for love will conquer.
Hello, anybody that wants to talk. Hello. We're going to slip into a little mandolin, man. Unless you want to slap your dog, Hal.
Sad, my bloodhound, I'm walking out that door. This ain't no idle thread like all them times before. Me and Homer's leaving, I can't take it anymore. You slap my bloodhound, I'm walking out that door. You call me from your sister's on Friday afternoon. From all that background noise, I knew it was salute. I never really cared about what you say and do. You slap my bloodhound, and now I'm through with you. You slap my bloodhound, I'm walking out that door. This ain't no idle threat like all them times before. Me and Homer's leaving, I can't take it anymore. You slap my bloodhound, I'm walking out that door. I'll pick it, Larry. Hey, Homer, come over here and talk to me for a minute. You're the only one that understands anyway. It doesn't really matter that we fuss and fight or that you stay out with a man for half the night. There are some things in my mind I can't make right. You slap my bloodhound, I'm leaving you tonight. You slap my bloodhound, I'm walking out that door. This ain't no idle threat like all them times before. Me and Homer's leaving, I can't take it anymore. You slap my bloodhound, I'm walking out that door. Now Homer didn't mean to break down that door, and that was just an accident that happened on the floor. There are some things I can't take anymore. You slap my bloodhound, I'm walking out that door. You slap my bloodhound, I'm walking out that door. This ain't no idle threat like all them times before. Me and Homer's leaving, I can't take it anymore. You slap my bloodhound, I'm walking out that door.
Thank you. Clap, 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 clap. We have more since nobody wants to speak. And I'm figuring out how to do all this. My therapist says I have to put this together with my laptop right now. I had a major fund issue, but I had this all figured out and it was going according to plan. And then I ran into a thief. And I lost $10,000 in the remodeling project, and wow. So I didn't get to rebuild the studio like I want, and she says I can't right now because I have to spend money on other things. Like the Manland Man. Gotta do what you gotta do.
About like that?
About like that.
Harlan County, way back in 34. And like so many of us, he moved north after the war. Though he worked in the gold dust factories, where a man gets worn and torn. He never forgot his raising or the place that he was born. Man to the man with the golden hand, I can see your fingers fly. Man to the man with the golden hand, singing about okay, why? Heartland, singing tenor in a bluegrass band. And though I've known some pickers, I've never met a finer man. I can't still see him grinning, I can't see those fingers fly. Man to the man with a golden hand. Well, I'm proud you're a friend of mine. County way back in 34. And like so many of us, he moved north after the war. And though he worked in the coal dark factories where a man gets worn and torn, he never forgot his raisins or the place that he was born. Man to the man with golden hands, I can see those fingers flying. Man to the man with the golden hands, sing all about them hills of KY.
my neighbor, Mr. Russell, on the banjo. My former neighbor, he was, if he's still alive. I grew up with his son. And he hung out with Mr. Tom T. Hull and the watermelon wine.
Son, I remember when Tom T. Hall played right here. And someday, you're going to be just like him. I started playing guitar when I was just a kid, about 10. I play my old man's Kalamazoo. Seems I can't remember when. I'd sit out back behind the house, underneath a billion shining stars. But most of my time has been out playing guitar in these little small town bars. I wonder if Tom T. Hall really started out this way. For they say he played for tips at the corner cafe. Well, I never knew or seen him there. That was before my time. The poor old dogs and children, watermelon wine. I got playing was in a little town called Rushville. It's just a little farm town about 14 miles west of Connersville, where I heard folks say they saw him when he used to play there way back when. They seem to want to claim him now. I wonder if they claimed him way back then. Yes, I wonder if Tom T. Hall really started out this way. For the sea played for tips at the corner cafe. Well, I never knew or seen him then. That was before my time. The poor old dogs and children, the watermelon wine.
I was playing with the Russell Brothers. We were in Nashville waiting to go on the Ernest Tubb record shop. I walked over to touch them and met Tom T. Hall sitting in the back cabin room. When he found out I was from Connersville, he asked me if I would take $30 back to Jack Robinson. So life's damn dead all in this
It's
tale.
Late on Friday night. I am now playing my last song. And the waitress, she washed tables. Almost everybody now is gone. Except some old man at the bar who said, "Kid, you're good, what are you doing here?" Then he shoves a buck in my hand, has a jukebox, plays a song I like beer. Yes, I wonder if Tom T. Hall really started out this way. For they say he played for tips at the corner cafe. Well, I never knew or seen him then. That was before my time. Before old dogs and children,
watermelon wine he asked.
Fans that aren't watching the game. But, you know, I suppose it's on Fox. Club channel. Oh, I'm not supposed to say that. Sorry, I cussed. We're doing all this on a trial basis. We have no practice input from my producer. And if this seems to work, then by golly, she was right again. Anyway, I won't be able to do some of the things I want to do. It's not a computer system, but we shall wait.
It has always been my dream to start something from the ground up. But space is
I'd like to get to the finishing touches, but there's still a lot of finishing to do.
How are you handling this?
It's chaotic.
You're not the most flexible person.
But I can't say I'm back if I don't come back.
The service is actually a complex topography.
Okay, thank you, Bill, the science guy.
So far, so good.
Manager, we're looking for American Hero.
There's some other hosts that are on, I believe and I hope, the third Sunday of the month.
It'll be the most cataclysmic failure in the short history of space.
I've had to adjust my medication. It still seems to be working. In that progress. The doctor back house will eliminate me. I see Thursday, by the way. Go ahead and cheer. Yay.
I ain't a doctor. I go to a bunch of them now.
Okay. I need some help. 424-243-9540 is the number to call. If you want to talk.
Your
Let me pardon the interruption. Because I'm doing paperwork and other things around here, and I'm going to have to figure out another way to research. Because...
Houston, we have a problem.
I forget so much of this, and I'm just not used to it. Although I'm getting better from last or whenever 2 weeks ago's effort. In our studio, which used to be a small itty bitty thing that Craig used to dominate. It has grown and matured and everything's still on there. I cleared out what I could a couple of years ago, I believe, if not longer. Some things I don't want to clear out. Because do a TBI. People have faith. Some people have to have understanding, self-drive, commitment, medical conditions proper. Everything and other things need to flow together. But what really needs to happen is the same page of everybody. You just don't stop believing.
Cheap perfume, I was
Oh, who's cleaning this place?
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by the Brain Injury Law Group, Attorney Gordon Johnson, www.tbilaw.com, 800-9-
Welcome to another edition of the Brain Injury Radio Network, sponsored by tbilaw.com. For automatic reminders about this radio show and other great survivor events, sign up now for tbisn.org.
When Attorney Gordon Johnson speaks about recovery, he isn't talking about
Blog Talk Radio. Now it's time for the Brain Injury Radio with your host, Craig Cecilia.
Actually, guys, tonight it is Lee Carlson, and I am going to be in the studio this weekend doing some new intros for our new host, and so they'll have their own intro. I'm going to be real quick because Lee's got some great guests tonight, so we really encourage you guys to call in, and that number is 424-243-9540. And I just want to remind everyone, start packing your camping gear for our fourth annual Pacific Northwest Camping Experience, and that's July 11th to the 17th. If you go to tbisn.org, you can see the directions to the camp. You can see the workshops, some incredible workshops going on. It's absolutely free to attend the camp and all of the workshops. And we're even going to provide a couple of meals. But anyway, go to tbisn.org and check out the camp. It is one of the most ultimate camping experiences. And we are going to be doing a wedding there that Friday, a couple that met at our second camp, and they got to know each other, and they're going to actually be getting married at our fourth annual camp. And the last thing I want to say tonight, folks, make sure you check our friend's website, David McGuire, and that's runtoremember.com, and he is running coast to coast, you know, Pacific to Atlantic Ocean in the name of brain injury. And please log on to his website and show him your support. And with that, I'm going to just hand it over to Lee because he's got people all over the world just
This was about 10 years ago. My boss and his buddy Lee Carson, and they both live in Spokane, I believe, at the time. And this is how Brain Injury Radio started.
And I'm your host tonight on Brain Injury Radio, and our topic is using humor to heal. So I hope you all have your Groucho Marx glasses on with big, fake, bushy eyebrows and a rubber cigar or some other suitable clown costume or something. I'll spare you my Groucho imitation since I'm a lousy impersonator. You can just imagine me sitting here in front of the computer in my Groucho outfit. Anyway, when I wrote Passage to Nirvana, I purposely used humor throughout the book, and I didn't want it to be dark and depressing, and I'm constantly gratified how many people write me saying that they really appreciate the humor, so I thought using humor to heal would be a good topic tonight. Again, our number here on Brain Injury Radio is 424-243-9540. That's 424-243-9540. And I'd like to welcome our listeners from around the world.
Still is.
Call us on
Please.
That number. And we'll be taking calls in a few moments, so call in and get in line. But first, our special guest tonight is calling, our first special guest is calling in from Australia on Skype. And she can't be with us long. She has an important meeting to go to, but she's calling in live all the way from Melbourne, Australia. Her name is Katie Anson, and Katie is a neuropsychologist based in Melbourne. She works part-time in community-based brain injury rehabilitation and part-time in a children's hospital. Her doctoral research investigated the impact of different styles of coping on mood and adjustment following brain injury. And I found her because one of her papers referenced the importance of humor in improving mood and improving people's recovery from brain injury. So please welcome Katie Anson to the show. Hi, Katie, are you there? Oops, hold on here. Oh, there we go. Hi, Katie, are you with us?
I am, Lee. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. So, Katie, we all know that laughter can help us feel better in the moment, but why is elevated or improved mood important to people who are recovering from brain injury? Can laughter and humor really have any long-term positive effects on recovery?
It's a good question, Lee. Improved mood has definitely been shown to assist with motivation to participate in rehabilitation and to engage with activity. And because of that, it has a positive response in terms of people's response to rehabilitation and their engagement. Depressed mood has obviously got negative implications on psychosocial outcomes and functional outcomes. And the way an individual copes with challenges such as a traumatic brain injury can have a really significant impact on mood and these factors. So, as you mentioned in your intro, some of my research has been involved looking at different coping styles following traumatic brain injury. And what we found is that strategies focused on active and interpersonal and problem-focused strategies, one of those being using humour, was found to have, be associated with lower rates of anxiety and depression. So, yes, I think it can have a really big impact on recovery from brain injury. Hello, you there, mate?
I think we, can you hear me, Kate? I think Lee got disconnected, and so he'll be calling back in. So I guess I'm going to fill. It's a good thing there's two of us. I just saw that he lost his connection. So what do you guys think you do differently down there? I don't know what you guys have planned, so I'm just going to throw something out there because I'm lack of anything.
Sure.
What do you guys think you do differently there than we're doing over here? While we're waiting for Lee's back with us.
Hey,
there,
Craig,
okay,
I don't know what
happened.
Something happened. We have a new control center here, and I think I hit the wrong button. Sorry about that. Anyway.
The joys of live radio, hey, guys.
Yeah, really, pretty funny. That's part of the humor part. Hopefully we got a good laugh out of that. So, anyway, I remember my doctors kept saying to me that one of the most important things was that I need to avoid stress, that there were, you know, even chemical changes to the brain, such as cortisol and other chemicals that were stress-related, and that those would impair my recovery. And so it was really important to try and laugh. And my doctors were great. I would come in a funk and a depression and a bad mood, and they'd start joking with me. And by the time I left, I was feeling much better. Is there some truth to that?
Definitely. I mean, the process of laughing and engaging in humour can release endorphins, which are good for your mood, and that obviously has positive flow-on effects for those things I was talking about before in terms of engagement and wanting to participate in rehab and those sorts of things.
So what do you do with your patients, or what have you seen other doctors do? You had mentioned to me, you know, that there are behavioral techniques to try and get people to find more humor in what's going on in their lives. What sort of things do you do with them?
I mean, I think it's something that you have to be very sensitive about, because it's obviously a very traumatic time after someone's had an injury. And I think it's really about reading the signs and the information that the particular person is giving their therapist about when they're ready for that and when they're ready for moments of humour. I think you obviously don't want the humour to make a light of someone's situation in terms of making them feel like they're, you know, what they're going through isn't being understood and being valued. But at the same time, I think it just helps us to be able to reflect out of that situation at times and to see the lightness and the funny side of everyday situations.
That's interesting that you say as a therapist you have to figure out when somebody is ready, because I distinctly remember several times where I had such a network of doctors, from neuropsychologists to neurologists to psychologists to occupational therapists, and they all had a different idea of when I was ready for humor. And I remember one time my neurologist, you know, was joking with me and saying things that I thought were pretty funny, and then I went to a meeting with the neuropsychologist, and he looked horrified that he had said some of these things to me. So I guess, you know, there's no one right answer. It really is up to the therapist and what they think the patient can handle. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely. And I think it also has a lot to do with someone's natural style of humour as well. Obviously, some people can have quite, you know, a black sense of humour, quite a dark sense of humour that other people would find quite confronting, as perhaps a neuropsychologist did. And so I think that that's has to be very carefully managed and judged as well in terms of the individual, you know, what they would have found funny beforehand and how they would have used humour in their day-to-day life before the injury.
Right. Now, I'm also fascinated because most of our listeners are adults, but we do have some children, and we also have caregivers, parents and other relatives who are caregivers to children that have had brain injuries. And I know that a lot of your work is in the pediatric brain injury field. How would you do something differently with children than you would do with adults?
I think working with kids is fantastic from a human point of view, because I do think that they're often much less inhibited to show their humorous side and to find things funny and to really embrace whatever situation I guess they're thrown into. So I certainly find that humour is a very important aspect of working with children. The unit that I work on in Melbourne frequently has, you know, the clown doctors coming in and other people on the ward whose primary role it is really to get kids laughing and using those that humorous side of themselves despite the very difficult situation that they're in.
And would you actually have people come in to the ward like clowns or people that make, you know, funny balloons or things like that, or is that sort of a little bit too far out there?
No, definitely. We have clown doctors frequently on the ward and, you know, people dressed up in funny outfits and doing silly things in the lifts, and it's a big part of the unit, and the emphasis is really on seeing the lighter side for kids and I guess just helping them to embrace that, you know, propensity to laugh that just children naturally have.
Right. And so do you ever come in your white coat with a Groucho Marx, you know, disguise on and a rubber cigar?
I wish that was part of my role, Lee, but unfortunately, no, I tend to be doing the more serious side of things. But we have specially trained clown doctors who do that with them. But that's not my role directly.
Well, we'll have to send you some. I think it would be great. I can just see you in your white, you know, hospital coat and the stethoscope, and yeah, it'd be great. So anyway. Well, listen, I know that you have to run and you're going to a meeting. It's about 12:15 in the afternoon, your time in Australia, and I guess you've got an important board meeting of a committee that you're involved with. So I just really want to thank you so very much for taking the time to call in with us today. And we will be posting a link to your to the website. I'm forgetting right now, of course, my TV guys are right. What's the name of the company that you work for again?
Osborne Flynn Associates.
That's right, Osborne, right, yes, okay. So we'll let our readers, our listeners rather, know how to, you know, find out more about you. And thank you very much.
Thanks, Lee. Thanks for having me on the show.
Okay. Nice to talk to you, Katie.
See you later. Bye.
So that was great. I hope you could hear her. Sometimes those international connections, especially with Skype, are a little off, but she has a wonderful Australian accent. And I also was happy to have her on the show because it helps to remind all of us that TBI and brain injury is not just a U.S. problem, but it's a worldwide problem. Again, our number here on Brain Injury Radio is 424-243-9540. That's 424-243-9540. And I also just want to say a word about Traumatic Brain Injury Radio or Brain Injury Radio. I'm your host, Lee Carlson, and the radio show has only been in existence since this fall. Craig has done a great job putting it together, and we're growing every week. It's on every Monday night at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific time, or almost every week. Sometimes we miss a week, and I will be your guest host the last Monday of every month. Personally, I'd like to see the conversation grow to include not only TBI victims, but stroke victims, brain tumor victims, and any disease that affects the brain. They're all related. And I get many emails from people whose loved ones have had a stroke or some other brain impairment thanking me for the insights in my book. So what we're talking about here is not just strictly for TBI survivors. Our web address is www.blogtalkradio.com/braininjuryradio, which you probably know if you're already listening, but you can give other people that as well. And please tell everyone you know about the radio show. So before we get to our next special guest, I'll just do a little bit of my story and what I mean by using humor to heal. My doctors constantly pounded into me that stress was the enemy, that I really need to reduce stress in any way I could. And, of course, humor is a great way to do that. And as I said to Katie, I had some pretty funny doctors on occasion who said some pretty funny things. I was also recently giving a talk at a TBI rehab center called New Beginnings here on Long Island where I live. And there's a chapter in my book about humor and about laughter, and I was talking about something called ha-ha, a game called ha-ha, which my mother taught me when I was younger, where everybody lays down on the ground. You get 10, 20, 30 people, and everybody puts their head on the next person's stomach, and the first person says ha, and the next person says ha-ha. And you try very hard to keep from laughing and not laugh. And I got to tell you, by about the fourth or fifth person, everybody's just rolling on the ground laughing because you just can't stop yourself. And so I read this part of the book to, there were about 50 or 60 people at this meeting at the Brainier Center, and almost all of whom were TBI survivors, many of whom were in wheelchairs and, you know, had serious disabilities. And we started doing this, and they said, "You're not going to make us lie down on the floor, are you?" And I said, "Well, no, I'm not going to do that, but let's just go around the room." And so we just started, and by the time we finished, the whole room was in stitches. Everybody was just, they couldn't stop laughing. And it was just a great time, and it really helped change the whole mood of the whole meeting and everybody, and it was just a fun thing to do. So it was one of those moments that, again, reminded me of the importance of humor in the brain injury community, the importance of laughter and healing. So I'm going to bring in now somebody who's a real expert in helping people laugh and cause them to laugh. Her name is Lois McElravy, and Lois served on the board of directors for the Brain Injury Association of Montana for 7 years. She currently serves on the board for the Governor's Advisory Council for Montana Vocational Rehabilitation. She's a member of the National Association of Professional Women, the Brain Injury Association of America, and the prestigious National Speakers Association, NSA. Which I'm also a member because we both speak to groups about traumatic brain injury, and Lois also speaks about the importance of humor. And one of the things that she has said is that hanging on with humor and learning to laugh in the midst of trying times rescued me from the distress and despair of adjusting to a sudden life change caused by a brain injury and initiated my recovery. So I'd like to welcome right now Lois to our show.
I'm so glad
Lois,
to be here.
Are you there? Oh, there you are.
I am.
We're very glad to have you all the way from Montana. How are you?
Yes. I'm doing wonderful.
Good, good. Well, I know you've been traveling, so you're a little tired, and I love the fact that you had sent me an email earlier saying that you were going to lie down and get a little rest time so that your brain could rest and that you'd be in good shape to talk tonight, because as a traumatic brain injury survivor, I know exactly how that feels, and I do the same thing, and I think many of our callers can relate to that. So let me ask you a couple of questions about humor and brain injury. And, you know, the introduction that I just gave, you know, hold on, maybe I'm forgetting something. Let me just see something real quick here. Let's see.
I think you did a great job of giving what I'm doing now, but might want to give them a little bit of my background.
Yeah, and I was looking for, how did it drop out? What is that great organization that you belong to about the
Association for Applied Therapeutic Humor?
Can you ever relay that again?
Yes, it's AATH.org, Association for Applied Therapeutic Humor.
I just love it. I thought that I'd heard of all the various organizations that could possibly be, and when I heard that you belong to that one, I just thought, what a wonderful thing. There's an actual organization where people get together and learn about proper kinds of humor and the ways to use humor to help people heal and for therapeutic reasons. I just think that's great.
In fact,
so,
Lee, I'm enrolled in their Humor Academy. It's my second year to further my study of the benefits of humor and laughter and to really understand how humor and laughter work. The conference, their next conference is going to be April of 2012 in Chicago. And you can find out more about, you know, that organization or attending the conference at aath.org.
Great. Why don't you give everybody just a little bit of your background, especially, you know, your brain injury background and what happened to you?
I was misdiagnosed. My car was rear-ended by a careless driver who was driving a huge repair truck. And at the age of 33, I found that my life was suddenly confusion and chaos and a lot of pain. I was misdiagnosed as having post-concussive syndrome, so I didn't know I had a brain injury. Doctors told me my brain would repair itself, and in 6 to 9 months, I would be as good as new. Was I laughing? No. Humor was not my first response because life was very difficult at that time. But my husband, who didn't know how to help me, knew how to make me laugh. And when he made me laugh, it released my frustration and tension, lifted my spirits, and it gave me a glimmer of hope. Well, after that 9 month timeline had long vanished, and at 14 months post-injury, I was retested. My doctors told me that I had post-concussive syndrome. And that 2 years, they told me I did not have post-concussive syndrome, that I had a minor traumatic brain injury, that 2 years post-injury was the best I could hope for my brain to recover, that I could learn to function at a higher level with systems and strategies. Of course, now we know that the brain can heal past 2 years, but that's what was believed 20 years ago. I became terminally serious. I became terminally serious because brain injury survivor was not on my who I want to be when I grew up list. I'm going to come back to that and just give a little bit of my timeline as my background. It was 12 years post-injury before I started to have significant improvements in brain function. It was a long, slow recovery. But when I started to regain my ability to enter environments that were noisy and busy, vocabulary started to return, my ability to learn new things became easier. Doctors told me that it was due to the consistent effort of doing many small things over and over and over for a long period of time. So I started speaking professionally only 6 years ago. So my ending line is never give up or lose hope. When you least expect, something wonderful happens. Humor and laughter were not something that came naturally to me. When I was diagnosed as having a mild traumatic brain injury, I became terminally serious, and mean as snot is really what my husband said, and I was determined that I was I was going to show everyone if I worked really hard, I could overcome this brain injury and regain my life. And what he said is I showed everyone just how mean a person can get when they don't get their way. He came to me one day and said, are you going to let this TBI ruin your life? And I, you know, gave his question careful consideration of 3 seconds and said, I just might. It's not fair. Of course, then I did what any 33-year-old woman would do. I called my mother to tell on him. And she didn't say what I was hoping to hear. But what she did say was, you know, Lois, there are times in my life if I would not have laughed, I would have cried. And then she played a dirty, rotten trick on me. She wooded me and she coulded me, but she never shoulded me. She said, do you think you could find a way to laugh about some of the chaotic, hilarious mishaps that you continually are experiencing? She said, you know, Mom, I don't know. It just doesn't feel funny. And then she said, would you try? Would you try for your husband, for your children, for yourself? And I had a hard time telling my mother no. I can tell my husband no. I can tell a lot of people no, but not my mother. And that's where I got stuck because I didn't know how. I did not know how to laugh or to find any humor in the situation at all.
And
so I had to ask for help. I had to ask for help. I worked one-on-one with a therapist for 4 years. And slowly we just experimented and tried different things, different little strategies or little habits that I created so that I could learn to laugh again. And one of the things that I did from the very beginning was one fun thing. She told me my inner child had died. No, is that a surprise? So I had to do one fun thing every day. I had to put it on my to-do list. And I had to decide what it was going to be by noon so that I had something to look forward to in that day. And because if I didn't decide what I was going to do, of course the day would evaporate and I would do nothing. It had to last at least 20 minutes. And one of the only exception to the rule was on those days when I was having a miserable day, did not have time to do the dishes, let alone one fun thing. She said, then I must do two fun things. That was the start. The second thing I did was when I went to bed at night, I would count three good things. I was not allowed to count the things that went wrong, the 10 things that went wrong, the 15 things that didn't get done, the 4 people that hurt my feelings, or the 3 reasons I was furious. I had to count 3 good things, and I had to use my sense of humor to do that because I couldn't find many good things, so I had to start where I was. And the 3 good things were maybe things that didn't go as poorly as usual, like I didn't lock myself out of the house today. I didn't overflow the sink when I was doing dishes. I didn't burn my neck when I curled my hair. So when you start where you're at and the good things aren't even good, you just have to laugh at the absurdity of it. So those were the first 2 strategies that I started to use. And then the third one was I would just paste a smile on my face. You know, they say your brain believes what your face says. And I would use opposite emotions, so and opposite expressions. So if something went really poorly, I would smile and say, well, that went well. Now, I didn't understand why that was funny until I studied humor later on. If something was difficult, I would smile and say, well, that was easy. If something was dreadfully painful, I would smile and say, that was fun. And that's where I started.
That's one of my favorite all-time quotes is from Kurt Vonnegut, the writer, who said, we are who we pretend to be. So there you go. Lousy, if you pretend to be happy or pretend to be that, eventually that you will become that way.
And I had to do something because I was so sick of sitting in my misery. You know, and what I learned, though, this is the most interesting thing, is what I learned, and I still didn't understand at that time why it worked, but when I was in the middle of chaos and confusion, if I got distressed or upset, so did everyone around me. And my ability to think and problem solve would decrease even more. But if I were to smile and make light of the situation, even though inside I didn't feel like doing it, but if I just put that fake smile on my face and kind of made light of the situation like I just described, something miraculous happened. It's like I could actually think. And I might be able to even figure out a solution, and all the people around me would relax.
Yes, sir.
And now I know that when we're...
You bring up an interesting thing, which is that people's moods can have effect on other people. And so in that case, you're talking about your sort of black moods affecting the people around you. What about the opposite way? Because you had written me that your family used humor first when life did not feel funny to you, but it seems as if they're using humor had an effect on you. So it's a good lesson for caregivers and for family members that if they can, you know, even if the TBI patient is not finding humor, that the family can kind of help them. Is that true?
Yes, and there's some things that I've learned that can help that to be more successful than when I was, you know, first injured and my husband was using humor. Because there were times that he would laugh or he would say something that would just make me laugh. Then there were times that he would use his humor where I would become very offended or hurt. Of course, now that I've studied humor, we understand why that was. And so here's a couple of tips for caregivers and family members to use when they're dealing with a brain injury, a person who suffered a brain injury. Always, always, always empathize with feelings first. Say, that must be frustrating for you. That must be difficult for you. I'm sorry this is such a difficult time. Empathize with those feelings first. Must be embarrassing. Must be, it just must be terrible. Must feel terrible. Whatever. You empathize with those feelings. If you're laughing, then the next thing to do is make sure they know you're not laughing at them. You know, this is interesting. Sometimes people say, I'm not laughing at you, I'm laughing with you. Always check to see if they're laughing. Because often a person in the initial stages of a brain injury, they're not laughing. So the best thing to do is to tell them why you're laughing, which is, you know, you just caught me by surprise. That looked funny. That sounded funny. I didn't expect that to happen. If you can separate what has happened from who did it, you know, and that helps the brain injury survivor also learn to separate who they are from what they do. I may do stupid things, but I'm not stupid. So, and that will eventually allow that person with a brain injury to be able to learn the ability to laugh at the things that they do and the things that happen to them without making fun of who they are or putting themselves down.
That's great, great advice. Well, listen, Lois, I'm going to put you on mute so you can hear the rest of the show. So you're going to stay with us, and I'm going to start taking some calls from our listeners. And if any listeners have questions for you or anything that I think you might be able to answer better than I can, I'll bring you back on. And we're at the halfway point of the show. So thank you very, very much. I really appreciate it. And I'd like to let everybody know that Lois has several websites. She has www.lessonsfromlois.com, where you can get free resources, humor tips, and brain injury articles. You can also get live recordings of Lois's humor presentations on websites. And she also has another humor and brain injury blog called www.loismcilravy.com. And I will make sure that I post those on the Brain Injury Radio website. I'll put them on my own website, on my Facebook page. And by the way, if you're not a fan of my Facebook page, the Passage to Nirvana, please become one. I also have an email list that you can sign up for, which would be great because I'll be doing more. Sign up for the email list, you get 10 free chapters of my book right away. But I also have some other books in the works, including a more straightforward workbook for brain injury patients that I'll be sending out free chapters to people that sign up for the email list as I finish them. And I have a Twitter account, and I believe Lois has a Twitter account. Lois, do you have a Facebook page too? I'm not sure.
Yes, I do.
You do, okay.
And on my website, lessonsfromlois.com, they can connect to all of those.
Great.
My Facebook and my Twitter.
So, you know, there are lots of great resources for you between the two of us. And Lois has been speaking, as I say, for 6 years. And she speaks all over the country. So if you're looking for a great speaker, she's wonderful. I haven't been doing it nearly as long as she is, so I'm looking forward to learning a lot from her. But we're both members of the National Speaker Association, and we love to get out and talk to groups about brain injury, about humor, about just the importance of perseverance in the face of traumatic life events. So keep that in mind if you have any groups that need speakers. And so, Lois, thank you again very much, and now we're going to take some calls.
Thank you, Lee. It was just my pleasure. I'll be hanging on in case someone has a question for me.
Great. Thank you very much. Okay, so let's see who we have here. Hi, this is Lee Carlson of Brain Injury Radio. Who am I talking to?
Lee, Hello? Are you speaking to me?
Yes.
Hello, Lee. My name is Craig Phillips. How are you tonight?
Good, Craig. How are you?
Good, sir. I am with Second Chance to Live, which is my URL is www.secondchancetolive.wordpress.com, and people can get to my website very easily through going to just a Google search and entering in the four different words, Second Chance to Live, and doing a search, and then they will be brought to a search page, and I'm at the top of the search page. There's the first two or three, so they can just click on that, and it'll bring you to my website. My particular injury occurred when I was 10 years old in 1967. I wasn't supposed to get beyond high school academically. However, went on to get my undergraduate and my master's degree. I was in a coma for 3 weeks. I had right frontal lobe damage, coup contra coup, severe brain contusion, and brainstem involvement. The injury happened in 1967. There was no neurological rehabilitation at that time, so I was essentially on my own, and I taught myself how to walk, talk, read, write, and speak in complete sentences. And as I said, I went on and I got my undergraduate, my master's degree. I'm a master's level rehab counselor. I have a diverse background, both personally and professionally. On my website, I write articles to encourage, motivate, empower, and provide hope to people with brain injuries and other people that have been faced with other types of trauma, abuse, or adversity.
So, Craig, as a therapist, then, do you ever use humor with your patients or with other TBI people, or did you use humor in your own recovery? Or
I am somewhat of a, I don't know if this is the best term, I'm somewhat of a, I believe that it's important to confront issues and to look at issues. And so in terms of, because my injury happened in 1967 and I grew up with this an invisible disability, I didn't have a whole lot of humor in my life because I was basically I was a scapegoat growing up, and no one knew about the extent of my, the injuries that occurred due to the traumatic brain injury. So on my throughout my life, what I've done is I've tried to find a way to punch my way out of the proverbial brown paper bag, and I've learned a lot of different things along the way. So one thing I wanted to share and not take up too much of the time, I appreciate listening to Lois. Hello, Lois. We talked before. Hope you're doing well. And recently I wrote an article for Second Chance to Live, and I would really encourage people to go to my website and read the article. It's called A Traumatic Brain Injury Keeps Swinging at the Fences. In this article, I basically talk about, there were a lot of different people, such as Babe Ruth and Thomas Edison, who had a lot of naysayers in their life, too, but they kept on swinging at the fences, and as a result, they succeeded in a lot of different ways, as you can read about in my article. I also have a link to a page called But They Did Not Give Up About, and on this page, Lee and Lois, there are many different examples of people who were discouraged by other people to not pursue their dreams. And what I do is I basically encourage people to learn to use their gifts, talents, and abilities in ways that work for them. Although I believe a traumatic brain injury is, or any type of adversity, is merely a switch on the railroad of life that points us off into a different direction that we would normally not have gone. Such as in my case, I thought that I was supposed to be using my education, being a counselor, and sitting, across from other people and so forth, but it didn't work out that way. But I learned to, I created a blog, Second Chance to Live, as I said, on February 6, 2007. So I just encourage people to use their passions, because I believe that passions do not die. I believe that our mode of delivery is...
Thank you. Craig, I'm just going to break in and thank you very much, because I think we will probably cover that topic in an upcoming show, because passion is really important. So I'm just going to put you on hold again, and we've got a lot of other people waiting, and we'll see if anybody else does anything.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
Humor and recovery. So, nope.
Sure.
Thank
you so much.
Calling in. Okay. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. Thank you, Lee.
There's a game six. This is the guy that's got to get going.
Hi, who's this?
Good morning, Lee. It's Rhino.
How are you?
I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Good. And where are you calling in from?
Dallas, Texas.
It looks like
Texas?
Yeah, Dallas, Texas.
Dallas, Texas. And I'm sorry, what was your first name again?
I'm Scott Frazier. They know me by Rhino.
Ah, there we go. Well, Scott, how can we help you tonight?
Well, I just, you know, you're talking about humor. That's probably the hardest thing to find after you bust your head. You know, it's great. It works. You finally use it. But, you know, you can't find the humor for the first couple of years, man. It ain't there. You don't understand.
No.
But once you finally get where you treat it as a joke, then it starts getting better. And I know that why, because that's how I did it. It just took a while.
So what emotions did you feel for those first few years instead of humor?
Rage.
Mm-hmm. Rage, anger.
Oh, I just, you know, rage would have been a good start, but it probably went up from there at times. It was just, you know,
right.
I just, you know, my whole life disappeared, and I was pissed.
Yep. So when that turning point came, years after, you know, several years afterwards when you just started to find the humor again, do you remember what caused that turning point? Was it anything in particular, or did it just happen on its own? Or? Scott, are you there? Hello.
Yes,
Scott, have we got you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Where'd you go?
Oh, there. I don't know. I don't know if you went somewhere, I went somewhere, but we're back. So I was just asking you, you know, do you remember that turning point? Was it anything in particular that helped you move past the anger and the rage and towards starting to find
a girlfriend of mine mailed me a DVD. Blue some comedy tour. Redneck Comedy Tour DVD. Jeff Foxworthy and Ron White and a couple others, and I just cracked up. After that, again.
I love Jeff Foxworthy. He's great.
Yeah, he's pretty good. Don't particularly care for Larry the Cable Guy, though. Other than that, the rest of them are good. Good humor. Bill Engvall.
Well, you know, you bring up a good point, because I do that all the time, and I was even doing it today. I was having a bad day earlier today, and I've learned how to download some humor things, you know, some podcasts and stuff. And instead, when I'm in the car and I had to go somewhere, I said, you know what, I'm going to listen to something really funny, because that's going to help. You know, that's going to help get me out of my funk. And I was having some issues, some brain injury issues and things, that some memory issues and things that just had me kind of upset. And I'm like, okay, how am I going to get out of this? And I got out of it by listening to some humor from somebody else.
Well,
it sounds like that's what you did too.
I've seen lots of doctors, and I'm not impressed. But, you know, I have a question I ask a lot. When they, you know, start telling me this going to do this, or you got to do this, or whatever, and I'll ask them how that's working out for them, because it's not. I've been TBI a long time. I know what works and what doesn't for me. When I go to a doctor and all he's got is a piece of paper, and I'm the first TBI he ever saw, I'm not impressed. And unfortunately, we're getting to be the flavor of the month here. TBI is in the news. We got veterans coming home. They're scrambled. We got people here scrambled. 400,000 is what they project from the war right now. 400,000 new brain injuries.
Yep.
They're coming home. Not to count 200,000 or so we get every year just domestically.
Yep.
You know, so all of a sudden we're the flavor of the month. Everybody wants to help us.
Well, we can help them. We can help them learn about us. So that's my goal.
Well, that's, you know,
they'll know what to do to the new people. So Listen, Scott, thanks. We've only got about 16 minutes left. I have a whole bunch of callers, so I'm going to just put you on mute again, and I'm going to go on to the next caller. So thanks for calling in. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Lee Carlson on Brain Injury Radio. Who am I speaking to?
Hi, are you talking to me?
I sure am.
Oh, this is Janine. And,
hi, Janine. How are you?
I'm doing well. I had a brain injury 6 years ago when I was 17, and it was pretty severe. I had a subdural hematoma, craniotomy, where they removed half my skull. And I have to say I was pretty good looking with half my hair down to my chest and the other half of my head shaven and concave. I've been doing my best to maintain an optimistic attitude. And I've really been inspired by my work with my therapist, which helped me to rearrange my goals in life to become a physical therapist. And it's definitely been a challenge, but I think one of the best things that have helped me get through it is finding humor in all the negative things that are going on. Like when I fall down, I laugh, and I step on a friend's foot because I don't have good proprioception, I laugh, and just things like that. And part of the reason that I was able to make such a remarkable recovery is that I do use humor to help me. And I recently gave a guest lecture for the first year medical students at my school. And during my presentation, I used humor to lighten up the devastating experience. And I think the way that I introduced that humor into it really helped the students learn. And so three of my favorite quotes are, pain may be mandatory, but suffering is optional. And believe you can do it, and live, love, laugh. So,
Our blast from the past, humorous, very mandatory in our life's recovery, which is every day for the rest of their life, and I found that to be true. Now that's 13 years and into it. I remember when they used to call me a bub baby. I was 49 years old, 48, something like that. I want to thank all of our listeners, all of our callers, all of our Brandies that won't talk to me. Wink, wink. Segway. Brandy. It looks like the World Series will continue. Seconds, they tell me from the backstage. It's understanding and getting the advertisements out on a show. But then again, sometimes I have to have preparations for a show. And it's easier not to right now. I mean, I want to, but... Get back here. Wait a minute. That's it. It's just not... It's just... I got nothing.
Help me get my feet back on the ground.
Call in, talk, get me out of this.
I'll be back.
To make it official.
That's all, folks.